Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. I will be joined by the full crew this evening. People working hard tonight. Miles pulling triple duty. Right now he's on with Andy. He'll be hopping in to record with us in a little bit. And then later on, Miles and JR got to go and do their thing on climbing the big board. But right now I got the man, the myth, the legend, QB1, what's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? Happy to be back for another great episode of Climbing the Pocket.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, I mean, I feel like if you've been listening with us for this long, you should have an idea about our man, the Sexy Prince, and the sort of time that he runs on his watch. So he will be joining us. He will be here at some point. He just isn't here right now. So the hope is before we wrap this thing up, all of us will be back together, but you know, JR and I can't stop this thing from going right now, so we're going to jump right into it with, a bit of a debate, I'll say. I won't even really call it a debate. I think it was a good back and forth this morning, and I was actually surprised with which side of this you came on, because most tape analysis type of folks, which is, we know the side of kind of player evaluation that you really go with, most folks who are on the side of you know, tape evaluation have really been killing the Cleveland Browns, especially in the wake of the great game that Carson Wentz had last night. But you actually came in with some context, kind of, you know, talking about why it maybe isn't fair to gang up or jump on the Browns kind of after the fact. So wanted to you know, bring this up as a pod topic tonight because it was an interesting one. And I definitely wanted to get some more of your thoughts and some more of your takes on this with more than 140 characters. So I guess, why don't you think it's fair for people to really, you know, pile on the Browns at this point on the Carson Wentz thing?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to rewind back and just look at the Browns roster at the time and the current coaching staff at the time. I believe it was their first year when they were coming into whether to draft Carson Wentz or not. And just the state of their roster and the current coaching situation wasn't the best. And that's what I say by you have to use context when talking about or drafting these quarterbacks. Let's just look at, well, let's fast forward now to the current Eagles roster. You have guys like Alshon Jeffrey. You have Torrey Smith, Nelson Agholor. Once they moved him to the slot, he's having a great year. You have Zach Ertz. And then you go to Cleveland. You don't really have a lot of reliable targets like they have in Philadelphia. You have Corey Coleman, who stays hurt a lot. Kenny Britt has been disappointing since his rookie season. And they really don't have any other targets outside of that. You know, you have David Njoku, but he's still an unknown to this point. So who knows what Carson Wentz would be as a Cleveland Brown. Yeah, Hugh Jackson is a great developer of quarterbacks as a coordinator. But as a head coach, he really hasn't proven to be that kind of guy. And now we've seen with Doug Peterson, not only Peterson, but he has other coaches on staff who were former head coaches and who were former quarterbacks that can help develop Carson Wentz and take him to that next level. So, and I just think Peterson being a former NFL quarterback is helping Carson Wentz tremendously. And that's not a knock on Hugh Jackson and his staff, but I just think in Philadelphia, he's better surrounded with the tools and the coaching staff to succeed as opposed to Cleveland, where he would have been walking into a bad situation.
Yeah, and those are a lot of really good points. And I think that's the biggest piece of context that gets left out really anytime I feel like we have these sorts of debates on quarterbacks. So, you know, you have a guy like Deshaun Watson who's balling out. I know that for you, he was your clear-cut QB1 going into the process. But even throughout, you know, the tape grinding community, he wasn't, you know, everyone's consensus number one. He wasn't an Andrew Luck type of prospect where everyone thought, you know, Deshaun Watson, he's the guy, you know, sell the farm to get this guy. Some people like Mahomes, some people like Watson. And with Wentz, I mean, as we look back on it now, everyone's talking about, oh my God, Wentz, superstar. He wasn't even the first quarterback drafted in that draft. So again, there was another situation or instance where the evaluation or the evaluating community didn't agree on the player. And then in both cases, you have guys who went into favorable situations. Like Carson Wentz, the Eagles last year, even with the terrible quarterback play, when you look at Football Outsiders DVOA metric, they ended week 16 ranked at number 4 overall. So DVOA thought they had the 4th best team overall, even with as poorly as Carson Wentz played last year. So with him developing the way that he has, it really isn't shocking to see them be a successful team and having success. And then I know that you also called out some things that I wanted to give you an opportunity to expand on a little bit, where you were talking about some of the technical refinements that you've seen in Carson Wentz's game, comparing how he was last year or even as a prospect to what you're seeing from him now.
Yeah, and I was a fan of Carson Wentz pre-draft, but I wasn't a big fan. He was my QB2 behind Goff at the time of the draft, but I had a lot of questions about him, and understandably so. We always have questions or things that we want to tweak with these quarterbacks, and my biggest issue with Wentz was his footwork and his release. I just thought it was very elongated, and his footwork wasn't really great coming out. And another thing, he really kind of folded under pressure. And I don't have his exact numbers in front of me, but when he was pressured at North Dakota State, his numbers dropped significantly. But as we can see, he's made a drastic improvement because now he stands tall in the pocket. You know, being a 6'5 guy, he can just see over a lot of his linemen to see what's going on in front of him. And he's just fearless in the pocket, even when the pocket is collapsing on him. He made a touchdown throw yesterday, and that was just remarkable, where he stepped up in the pocket and avoided a tackle and just made a throw to, I can't remember exactly who the receiver was, but it was in the corner in the end zone where it was just phenomenal. And he's really refined that release. It's a lot quicker. It's not as elongated as it was coming out. And you know how they always show the release times on the broadcast, and you can see that he doesn't have that long loopy release anymore. Now it's very tight and compact and more refined, and his footwork is a lot better. And I mean, that's just credit to Doug Peterson, and that goes back to the whole context situation that we have. So it's really good to see him make those improvements, and now we're seeing an up and coming quarterback.
And that's a great point, again, that you make about, you know, what you saw on tape with him not handling pressure all that well. And it actually goes along with something that our friend, you know, Eric Eager posted today. And it seems that trait has still followed him a bit to the NFL. And that showed that that Carson Wentz right now has a passer rating of 117 when he's kept clean, which is 3rd in the league. But his passer rating drops all the way to 64.7 when he's pressured, which is 21st in the league. And the difference between, you know, clean and pressured is a minus 52.7, which is, you know, obviously not a great place for you being. That negative or that change between, you know, clean pocket versus pressure would put him at 27th in the league right now. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how this train keeps on going with Jason Peters out now, and what that means for Carson Wentz and the Eagles and you know, the type of pockets that he'll be dealing with from now through the rest of the season. But it was interesting. It was an interesting conversation. And it looks like, you know, while we were having this, you know, kind of random sidebar conversation, our man, the Sexy Prince, decided to join us. And I know you've got takes because we've been having this conversation for a couple of days and a couple of weeks about, you know, the Browns, Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson. And what your thoughts are on the whole situation about, you know, kind of the after the facts analysis of people saying, oh, my God, I can't believe they passed on these guys. And like, what are your thoughts on how this whole situation has played out, and specifically, you know, what the Browns are doing with their team now as it relates to developing the quarterback that they do have?
Yeah, I think this kind of goes to, you know, obviously the whole hindsight 2020 thing. A lot of people, they, you know, if I go back, for me, I related back to the 2015 draft, right? For me, I was very, very heavy on, you know, drafting Teddy Bridgewater. I thought that he was the most complete quarterback in that draft. You know, after that happens, 2015 happens, and obviously Derek Carr starts turning it on a little bit more, and even last year as well, a lot of people that I talked to came back and were just like, man, we should have drafted Derek Carr. And, you know, the day, I try to take players out of their situations and see if they would work in another situation. And, you know, a guy like Carson Wentz, You know, he has a great coaching staff. He had a pretty decent offensive line. You know, they gave him weapons like Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith. And, you know, you really surround him with a lot of weapons because you understand some of the limitations he might have going into that situation. I think it's very similar to how Derek Carr was. You give him a great offensive line, give him a good wide receiver and another one to compliment. And then you start to watch them start to flourish a little bit more. And the problem is with those guys is I don't necessarily feel as if you took them out of those situations and you put them in a situation like what Minnesota had to deal with for the last couple of years, I don't think that those guys would have succeeded with the environments that they are currently in because of their limitations. So, yeah, I think it is a little funny because I think a lot of people didn't even know who Carson Wentz was coming out. Jared Goff, maybe. Just because he was at a slightly bigger school. But I know the only way I knew about Carson Wentz because of our good boy, good man Eric Thompson over at the Daily Norseman. He, you know, he's an NDSU alum, and he talked about him all the time. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you have to be okay with if you like a guy coming out, you just have to be okay with, like, that's your guy and stuff. And, you know, sometimes you miss and sometimes you hit. But, you know, Deshaun Watson, in my opinion, was the best quarterback in last year's draft. And just kind of trying to tie it together is, I'm not a really huge fan of going back and forth with, you know, if you missed on the pick, like, if we find out later that, you know, Trey Wayne's never really worked out and Marcus Peterson may got, like, you know, that happens. A lot of teams miss out on good players. It just happens. You know, I would love to believe that we could have every good player play on this team, but we can only really have one starting quarterback. We can only have, you know, a few skill position players, and we can have so many good on the offense line and on the defense and stuff. So, yeah, I think it's a little silly, but you know, I understand why people do it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It makes for really easy content, and it's one of those things that, I mean, you'd never know the 49ers are 0-7, too, with the way that, you know, people enjoy kicking the Browns around. But, I mean, it's understandable. The Browns are the Browns. They've been a punchline of the league for a very, very long time. And I feel like their general manager, and this is one of the things that, you know, if, you know, Haslam gets nervous and decides to blow it up again, would be so disappointing, is that these long-term decisions that they made in which, you know, we're not going to go and jump for the quarterback right now, we're going to amass picks and build for the future. I mean, that's a strategic plan that you would think ownership would have had to sign off on, right? So they're on a path. They know, okay, our team is hot garbage. We have really nothing. We have no talent. So we are going to amass as many picks as we can to get as much cheap talent in here as we possibly can, because we need to build pretty much across every position. That makes sense. I think part of the reason a lot of these quarterbacks that are highly touted come in and fail is they come into situations where they have no weapons, no offensive line, and they're asked to just carry a team. I mean, you look at a guy like Andrew Luck, who was a can't-miss prospect coming out. And yeah, he's had some statistical success, but, I mean, he might miss this entire season because the team they put around him was terrible. And he's just out there getting beat up week after week after week after week, and who knows what the rest of his career is going to look like. So, anyway, I guess we'll see how this whole thing plays out. It was an interesting conversation. I need for Hugh Jackson to stop mismanaging Deshaun Kizer, just roll with him for the rest of the season and see what he has there. And, you know, if they end up with the first overall pick, by then JR would be able to tell us who it is they should be taking in the draft, and I guess we could go from there. I guess, JR, did you have any final points, thoughts about, you know, this never-ending, you know, Browns versus tape versus analytics versus everybody on Twitter type of conversation that's been going on for the last day or so?
I think it's just the easy way out for fans to just say, oh man, they could have taken Carson Wentz, or they traded the picks that they could have used on Deshaun Watson, just because it's a narrative that the Browns are terrible at selecting quarterbacks and mismanaging them. So I just wish people would use a lot more context and think outside of the box, or critically think when they're talking about quarterbacks and the situations they're in, and if they fail or if they have success.
I just hope you know that. I just hope you know that because you said that, at some point tomorrow, Flip is going to send you a tweet reminding you of the context around why we didn't take Marcus Peters in the first round.
That's a totally different issue.
Wait, It's always way easier to criticize than it is to create. And you know, a lot of people with the armchair quarterback or armchair GM, you know, look at a situation and be like, "Oh my God, I would never do a situation like that." But
you know, I feel attacked right now, Sexy Prince, because you know I like to criticize things. So I feel like you subtweet me while we on a podcast together, and I don't appreciate it. But with that said, obviously the Vikings, they played a game. And I mean, at the end of the game, I feel like this is a little bit like, you know, what I said after we had the game before this last game. I mean, we got the W, but I mean, it wasn't the most pretty game. It wasn't the most pretty W, but they all count. We'll stack them up. We'll take them all. So JR, I'll start with you. I know you started to do your analysis on the game. I guess, what are your thoughts that you took away from this Vikings victory? Defense obviously played amazing. Offense, not so much. I guess, what were your thoughts?
I mean, of course, the defense played lights out. I thought they played phenomenal outside of the garbage touchdown at the end that we probably shouldn't count, but whatever. I thought the offense was, I mean, it was okay. They did enough just to win. And, I mean, let's be honest, the defense is really carrying them at this point, and they're just not making a lot of mistakes on offense. And it was a typical Mike Zimmer win. Run the ball down the throat and play good defense. That's the way Mike Zimmer wants to win, and that's the way they won on Sunday against the Ravens. I thought some players played really well. Anthony Barr was a guy that flashed a lot. Linval Joseph was a guy that quietly flashed a lot. Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter always played well like they normally do. And what I was really, really happy to see was the offensive line overcome some adversity. They lost some guys. Sears went down, and some young guys had to come in. Reef went down, and Rashad Hill and Danny Isadora came in. And
Stop being coy. You went and listed off all these people. You know we need to talk about your man, Danny Isadora.
That's my guy, man. I was happy to see him come in and have some success. They ran right behind him the first play he was in. And coincidentally, it went for 35 yards. But that's a topic for another day about my guy, Big Danny. Shout out to him. They need to start him, by the way. But that's another topic. But anyway, I was happy to see those guys come in and have some success and overcome some adversity, because last year we saw the offensive line suffer so many injuries, and it just kind of felt like, oh, man, here we go again with these injuries. But they didn't complain, and they didn't look like to have a significant drop-off from what was in there. Yes, we know Riley Reiff is a down – or Rashad Hill is a downgrade from Riley Reiff, excuse me, but it was good to see them still try to operate their offense, even though he wasn't in there. And I thought it wasn't a significant drop-off or noticeably drop-off, because they still were able to run the ball and have some limited success in the passing game. So just seeing them able to overcome some adversity on offense, and, of course, the defense playing well, is what I took from that game.
Awesome. And Yanka, what were your thoughts as you kind of watched? And I know that you've probably gone and rewatched a little bit. You've, you know, dug in and looked at some things. I guess, what were your thoughts overall on the performance, and what were your big takeaways?
I couldn't help, like, JR obviously mentioned it. Danny Isadora coming in, from what I was seeing, like, there were some, you know, there's obviously some growing pains with him. You know, there was a block that he, you know, he should have held a little bit longer and stuff. But, like, overall performance I thought was phenomenal, especially in the run game. He was getting into the second level a lot of the times, and he just felt like it just seemed like he belonged, like he was supposed to be on the field. And he definitely gave a little bit more as soon as he came on. So I thought he was a bright spot. One thing I guess I'm starting to feel about this season, and I don't know if it's coincidence or not, this season feels very, very similar to 2015. The Vikings were about, I think they were 2-2 or throughout the first, through that first like quarter. And then they ran on that 6-game, you know, win streak and were like 8-2 roughly. I think they were, I think that's what this team is kind of right now. Where they, you know, this is definitely a time to stack wins. Coincidentally, in 2015, they were also facing the third place schedule as well. But this is a time to stack wins, to continue to obviously, you know, you can win by defense right now. The only thing that I'm obviously, I've said this in a few pods before, is I'm worried about the offense. And I'm worried about them because obviously you've won most of these games through defense, right? You can't keep doing that because guys are going to start getting hurt. The production is going to start to, you know, decline as guys, you know, they get beat up, all that stuff. So we need to start identifying, you know, what is this offense going to become in 3 or 4 weeks? Because once we lock that in, I think that's when you start to really make that push in December and you know, obviously in playoffs and stuff. But right now, we don't really quite have that identity, and it makes sense why we don't. You know, we're playing Case Keenum. We're also, you know, Latavius Murray and Jared McKinnon are really starting to get going a little bit more so since they weren't a huge part of, you know, the beginning of the season. You know, Stephon Diggs has been out for the last couple games, and Adam Thielen's really had to step up and try to be that number one. Still trying to figure out who that really that third guy is. You know, I keep mentioning that third guy, but I think it's so important. Rudolph hasn't really taken hold of that. Treadwell has flashed at times and then, you know, just kind of disappeared at times.
Nope.
I'm just saying
we're done with that one though.
But what I will say though is this, like this, and you guys hear me talk about this guy all the time. Jarius Wright coming out of the woodwork again to save the Vikings, but in a lot of important situations. He's obviously a very, very good third down guy. I think he can contribute on first and second down as well. And if he needs to get more time for us to, you know, give Diggs and, you know, Diggs and Thielen, who are going to command most of those targets, we just need a third guy who might be downfield or just in the middle. I'm all for whoever needs to become that third person to round out this offense a little bit more. I'm all for giving them more time. I think right now, maybe who's in the lead, maybe Jarius Wright just made a statement in this last game. But
and I am definitely not going to my big takeaway. Not going to disagree with what you're saying there on Jarius, because I think that, you know, every time that he is given opportunity, he comes in, he's a veteran, he's prepared, and he performs. I guess the question I have for both of you, and, you know, we're going off on a bit of a Jarius tangent, which should be expected, you know, when Jarius does something, we know the Sexy Prince is going to make sure we acknowledge it and have some conversation about it. But is Jarius strictly a slot guy at this point? And do you think that impacts what the Vikings are thinking? Because it seems very much like the Vikings really wanted to go into this season, Diggs on the outside, taking advantage of his quickness against the bigger corners, and then Thielen in the slot, taking advantage of his, you know, size, route running savvy, et cetera, against, you know, smaller nickel corners. And would playing Jarius significant snaps be something that would throw off that plan? I mean, we did see, and again, the Ravens have a great defense, but, you know, Thielen, you know, having to be that outside guy, getting that attention, I mean, his efficiency was not where it has been in times past. And so do you think that could be something that factors into who they choose to be that third guy and what type of receiver they choose? So I'll start with JR on this one. And obviously we'll give, you know, Yinka the last word as it comes to Jarius, right?
I actually like Jarius, right? I was a big fan of him. And, I mean, every time he steps on the field, good things happen. It just seems like great things happen when he is on the field, whether that's third down, first down, or second down. I like to call him a chain mover. He's a guy that understands where to fit in the soft spots and zone coverage. He's not going to get you a lot of yards after the catch just because that's not the type of receiver he is. He's a guy I like to call a catch tackle guy. Once he catches the ball, he's usually going to get tackled just because he understands where to fit in the soft spots and the zone coverage, but he also understands how to beat man coverage as well. And we saw that last game against the Ravens. So I wouldn't have a problem with him getting increasing snaps in the slot just because that's where I think he can have the most impact. I just don't think he's an outside receiver. I just don't think he can consistently get open from the outside just because of his limitations. But I think he's a guy that you can put in space against linebackers and safeties in the slot, whether it's man coverage or zone. And I think he can have a lot of success there.
So given how much we run three wides, I guess, how would you go then? Would you put Thielen and Diggs on the outside and run exclusively with Jarius in the slot, or would you just have a rotation where, you know, occasionally Jarius was working in and sometimes Thielen was in the slot with like a Floyd or potentially a Treadwell on the outside? I guess what would your kind of rotation look like if you were kind of optimizing what we have at wide receiver?
I think it just depends on the opponent. Of course, Floyd and Treadwell would be your outside guys, but I think a rotation of Diggs, Thielen, and Wright in the slot, I think you could do that. And that's not saying Diggs and Thielen can't play on the outside, because they've shown to be able to do that. But I think you can incorporate a guy like Jarius Wright on the inside if you want to. But just because we know Treadwell and Floyd are not going in the slots because they're not that type of receiver. But if you do want to incorporate those three guys in the slot, I think you can.
And Yinka, obviously, we're talking about Jarius, so we know you got to get the last word here. What are your thoughts? How would you optimize kind of our wide receiver core? Obviously, we know you want Jarius to get more snaps, so what does that look like if you are in charge of the Vikings personnel and you know, rotating those wide receivers to get the best out of all of them?
Yeah, man, my boy Jarius, just get him on the field. I don't necessarily think he needs an optimal amount of snaps. Like I said, we already know that Thielen and Diggs are going to command a lot of the targets, rightfully so. But one thing that I think I did note in an article I wrote, you know, a couple months back, was like, I knew that Stephon Diggs was going to miss some time. I mean, the last couple of years, he's always missed time because of injury. Mostly it's been the groin, but he's just not a receiver that I can consistently count on to give me 16 games in a season, which means that there's somebody else who's going to have to step up in his place. I'm also not I was pretty outspoken about not relegating Stephon Diggs to the slot because he was so good. Adam Thielen is a guy I think you can play both inside and outside, so you get some flexibility with him. We haven't really seen as much Treadwell in the slot. I think I'd prefer him to stay outside, but I guess if the Vikings maybe had some kind of thing where they could, maybe could get some mismatch on Treadwell there, they could slide him into the slot, I'd be more for it just to see how it progressed. But he would not be my first candidate. Jarius Wright is a guy that I think can win the slot consistently more so than he can on the outside. But I don't want to relegate him to the slot either, because I can't. I just think that the way the offense should look right now, you know, if I had to go three wide, you know, I would put, you know, Diggs and Thielen on the outside, Jarius in the slot, but have some flexibility to move those guys around and stuff, you know, just based off mismatches. Something consistently is third and long. It's like, I think third and long should, Jarius Wright should be on the field. And he should be on the field pretty consistently. Situationally, if it's third long, I'm having Diggs, I'm having Wright, and then I'm having Adam Thielen would probably be the three main ones. But maybe base is probably more Treadwell, Adam Thielen, and Diggs. So, you know, you just gives yourself a little bit more options, a little bit more flexibility. Third and long, like we saw a few plays where Jarius even laid out to make the play. So I just want to see him contribute a little bit more, because obviously when he gets in, he makes plays. So hopefully I can incorporate that.
And Miles is here. And just like that, we have the full group together. Miles putting that work in today. First on the pod with Andy. Now here with us. Later, we're climbing the big board. What is going on, Miles Gorham?
Man, I'm tired. That's all. I got to get up at 4 in the morning tomorrow, too. So,
boy,
I got a long – it's going to be a long 24 hours for me.
Well, you know, I'm going to just jump you, throw you straight into the deep end since you're here with us now.
Of course. I can only guess the topic.
Well, you know, we're talking wide receivers, so I feel like you know the topic. Is it over for Laquon Treadwell?
No.
I mean, just because as we're looking I was listening to another podcast. And, you know, they were far more pessimistic, I think, about, you know, Treadwell's outlook than we have. But when you look at pretty much any evaluative tool to look at him in a big picture, you know, yards per route run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, like, he continues to come up very, 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 very low, ranked on a very low end. And so I'm not saying it's over, like he's going to be out of the league, yeah, but is the dream of him kind of having a breakout season, is that over?
Oh, I mean, it kind of, I mean, depends on your definition of breakout. I mean, he's got over 100 yards receiving. I'm just playing. He's not, can he get to maybe 400, 500 yards this year? Maybe. It's going to be hard to do with guys like Diggs and Floyd coming back. But now, you know, what kind of role does Michael Floyd have in this offense if he's healthy? That's kind of a wonder I have too. I know they're still high on him, I'm sure. But overall, do I think it's like over for him? No, I don't think it's like over for Laquan Treadwell. I think, you know, just
let me rephrase then. Is your preseason prediction of his production for this season, is it over for that then?
What did I say? Like,
I feel like you said like 500 yards and some touchdowns. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get the touchdown mark. I still think he could maybe get to 450 yards. I think it could happen. It's not one of those that's like out of the realm. It's not like a, oh my God, if Laquan, like, oh my God, can you get 300 more yards in, what is it, 9 more games? I'm not, it's a possibility, but the touchdowns I don't see happening at this rate. I think he's only gotten, what, thrown to twice in the end zone, and it was only, and they're on deep passes, so I don't think they're going to use him in the red zone too often. I don't think he's going to have that breakout season that I was hoping for, that I kind of would have liked to see, but as long as the team's winning, it's all right. But I don't think, just like last week, you know, after the Packer game, that really, really nice catch he had, and, you know, putting up, you know, making some decent plays, you know, people are starting to ride high a little bit. You know, you gotta kind of use this as like his. You know, I was just talking to Andy about it. He's only, 22 years old. If he'd come out of the, you know, draft this season, it would have been his true, after his fourth, you know, his fourth and true senior season. He came out early last year, so you could kind of look at it that way. And I understand, since he was a first round pick, the luxury's not always there to be, you know, be as patient, but with guys like with Adam Thielen and Diggs and, you know, Jarrett Stripe being able to contribute and all that, you do have the luxury of kind of being a little more patient, at least in my opinion, being able to be patient with a guy like Laquan Treadwell, and let him develop a little bit. But no, I don't think he's going to have that breakout sophomore surge that I kind of hope for, but I'm not, you know, writing him off at all.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, we've talked about it, and I've, you know, we've gone back and forth joking around about it, but obviously when I say, you know, over for him, I my expectation or what I'm saying is not that Laquan Treadwell will be out of the league, you know, next week, next year. I still think that he can be a player that, you know, has a role on the team. I was mostly talking for about sure. your preseason prediction for him. Is it over for that? And is the sophomore surge over?
Unfortunately it is. I mean, there would need to be like a Diggs would have to miss, you know, quite a bit more games, which I, you know, it sounds like he's going to be good to go after the bye. Hopefully, as long as, you know, Diggs is good to go, Michael Floyd comes back, it'd be really hard to see him get that many opportunities, that many targets, if, you know, guys healthy.
And did you see what JR just shared with the group? I mean, damn, that's cold blooded, JR.
Oh Lord.
So top 11 wide receivers seeing the highest percentage of their targets in tight windows. So less than 1 yard of separation per the next gen stats. Laquan Treadwell, 47.1% of his targets have been tight window targets. Unfortunately, he only has a catch rate of 37.5 on those. And the quarterback's passer rating when targeting him on those sorts of passes is 18.2. Not good. Not good. But JR, since you shared these stats with us, I'm going to go to you first, Yinka next, because, you know, Miles said a lot of words there. I want your rapid reaction. Is it over for the sophomore surge, 500 yards, 4 TDs, yes or no?
Yeah, it was never a reality, in my opinion. Like I said, 350 yards and 25 to 30 catches was always my realistic situation for Laquan Treadwell, just because there's too many mouths to feed in the Vikings offense. And at best, he would be the fourth option behind Diggs, Thielen, and Rudolph coming into the season that we thought. And then adding in the factor of Dalvin Cook getting those receptions as well was going to take some catches away from him as well. So I thought 25 to 30 catches and 350 yards was probably the most realistic expectation for him coming into the season.
Are you still on that bandwagon?
Yeah, I think he can still get there. And I don't know his exact numbers, what they are right now, but I think maybe he can get there.
I think it's like 11 catches or something like that for like 107 yards, something like that.
Yeah, so I think he can get there.
And Saxy Prince, rapid reaction for you. What are your thoughts? Is it over for the sophomore surge? 450 to 500 yards, is that still on the table?
I'm going to say yes. Okay. I'm going to say yes. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, so Miles, you got your man Yanka. He is still riding with you. I think he might also be trying to stay on your good side because he wants you coming out next Monday. But, you
that's
know,
my quarterback.
That's neither here nor there. And I know we kind of went off a path, but it was a good one because, you know, we got to get some Jarius conversation in there, talk a little bit about Treadwell. But I just wanted to go back to something that I feel like we all agree on. Let's bring it back to a place where we can all agree. How terrible is Joe Flacco? JR, just kick us off. I know as a quarterback, that had to be hard for you to watch that sort of quarterback play. I know we've been ripping on Case and, you know, pointing out things he could do better, but Joe Flacco looked awful.
I mean, he's living up to his nickname that I gave him, and that's Joe Wacko Flacco. I mean, it is what it is at this point. I think he's permanently scarred from that Super Bowl run that he had, and I think that's really the only bright spot he's had in his career. And, I mean, let's be honest, when quarterbacks make Super Bowl runs, they're rewarded. And I think the Ravens made a mistake rewarding him that contract because it's crippled their cap situation. And they can't surround him with weapons that he needs. And, I mean, they have a great defense, but they've drafted most of those guys. So they haven't been able to sign those free agents that Flacco needs in order to succeed. And, I mean, he just looks totally broken because we probably can't even name three guys that he was throwing to on Sunday just because the talent was so bad. But despite the talent, I just don't think he's a good quarterback right now. I mean, he has all the traits, the arm strength that a lot of scouts love to see, but it's just between the ears where he looks like he's struggling right now. His mind looks sped up, his feet look sped up, and he just doesn't trust what's going on in front of him and what he sees, and that's what you saw on Sunday as well.
Yeah, Miles, I guess anything else to add in terms of what you saw from Joe Flacco? Is it over for Joe Flacco?
I think it's been over for Joe Flacco, but I think the fans in Baltimore definitely are probably like, yeah, it's done. Like, we need to move on from Joe Flacco. They might not understand the full cap situation that they're kind of hamstrung in. But I thought on Sunday Joe Flacco looked. Bradford looked on Monday night against Chicago, but Sam Bradford was hurt. Joe Flacco wasn't hurt. He just didn't look like he wanted to be there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I mean, I guess based on who he was throwing to, it, I probably wouldn't want to be there either. Yes, Saxy Prince, since, I mean, you have some experience now at the quarterback position, you understand what it's like to be out there dropping back without a full complement of weapons to really go through. And can you help us understand what it's like from your perspective and what maybe Joe Flacco's going through when you're out there, you know, dropping back and Miles Gorham is not out there for you to throw it up to?
Yeah, man. Oh, man, I can't even talk about that. But I do know it from experience, but something that I saw when I went back and watched the tape is you could definitely tell, the receiver that he would – multiple times that he was trying to hit, you were either running a poor route, an incorrect route, or they were just turning the wrong way. Now, for those who don't know, obviously once you get back to your drop back, like, as soon as you hit that, like, your receiver should be within a yard of where you want them to be at. And it was just clear that Joe was just trying to, you know, trying to have that timing. But, you know, he's not throwing to guys like Mike Wallace anymore. You know, he wasn't throwing to, you know, some of his other, you know, top-end receivers who, you know, can make those plays and stuff. And you almost felt bad for him at times because, like, he's bad, but I think Sunday made him look way worse than he probably is. I think he would make a wonderful bridge quarterback in San Francisco when they need to draft a new quarterback. But yeah, it's just all bad right now for Joe Flacco, and Baltimore needs to find a way to get him out of that team or just out of that cap situation.
It'll cost $45 million in dead cap until 2020 if they get rid of him.
Maybe Cleveland's in the market. They'll take it on just like they did Brock Osweiler. they're in the market for draft picks, so they'll take it on too. Why not?
Yeah, I hope they don't do that.
I know. I'm just.
Oh playing, man.
But like, they've proven the
draft,
that they've done
it before. Draft Twitter would burn to the ground if Cleveland did that. It'd be fun just for the drama.
He's kind of Brock Osweiler right now, though. I mean,
yeah.
Baltimore would have to beg a team to take him.
That contract is the worst in sports, any sport.
It's really bad.
I think Carlos Stanton is due $300 million, but yeah.
So I guess let's talk about the superior quarterback in the matchup, you know, versus the Ravens, which obviously everyone would have thought going into the season would be Case Keenum. And JR, I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond to some things, because you know it seems as though you know Case Keenum has ascended to a place in Vikings lore that he can no longer be criticized, and you can no longer offer critiques. Because if you critique anything about Case Keenum's game, obviously that means you hate the Vikings and want them to lose. So I guess, could you help me understand, what was it about the analysis that you provided about Case Keenum that seemed to get folks so worked up? And what are your thoughts on the fact that people seem to really have such a difficult time with, you know, very football-related constructive criticism about a quarterback that I feel like anyone looking from the outside would see is playing a bit uneven at this time.
Yeah, tell us, JR. Tell us.
It's just funny seeing fans do a complete 180 on a player if they start winning games. I mean, we're talking about a guy that a lot of fans didn't even want over Taylor Heinicke a couple months ago, but now he's the savior for the Vikings, and he's going to be the guy that leads the Vikings to Minnesota to play in the Super Bowl. So it's pretty funny just seeing fans do a complete 180, and it's also funny just seeing fans that can't really use context when they're evaluating quarterbacks, just because they don't have the proper knowledge or, you know, the past experience or see things like a lot of other people can, especially that's played the position. So a lot of the things you see with Keenum is that, yes, he's getting the ball there. Yes, he's throwing the guys, but they're very, very inaccurate. And the Vikings receivers are doing a really good job of helping Keenum out, making catches outside of their body frames, because his accuracy is just all over the place. And what you see is they're not able to get yards after the catch because they're having to make these miraculous catches, just because there's no telling where the ball is going to end up once it comes out of Keenum's hand. So credit to the Vikings receivers for helping out their quarterback. But, I mean, like I said all the time, Case is a glorified backup quarterback, just because you don't know what Case Keenum you're going to get on Sundays. And we saw the definition of the up and down Case Keenum on Sunday. I mean, he was really bad in the first half, in my opinion. And that was one of the reasons why the Vikings offense was so sporadic and so up and down. Yes, he made some good throws throughout the game, and he does do that from time to time. He had a good throw to Adam Thielen down the sideline, and another good throw to Case to Jerry's right down the sideline as well. So he does make some good throws from time to time, but you really don't know when it's going to happen or when to expect it. So, I mean, that's just the story of Case Keenum.
Well, all right then. Miles Yenka, we'll go in that order. Could you breathe in and give us a response to this fire that the JR has just put down?
No, I'm gonna stay out of this one.
Saxy, you got anything else?
Yes. So I guess I have to start with saying, man, it's so funny how short people's memories are. Last year we went 5-0, and you know, I put out a take that got a little bit of criticism where I'm just like, hey, you know, like, it's fine, you know, celebrate, you know, have your beers, all that stuff. But, you know, we haven't won anything yet, because obviously the way that we were winning was clearly unsustainable, and it proved to be. Now, do I necessarily feel like this year is the exact same? No, I think this year is a lot more similar to 2015 than it is to 2016. That being said, I understand the mentality of we're winning. It's great. Everything's great. But the problem is with that is, even when things are going okay, like as a musician, even if I play a really, really, you know, great performance, I know my lesson teacher is going to come back and say, hey, you were sharp on this note. This note needed to be a little bit more dynamic, all the other stuff. And I'm also, you know, son of immigrant Africans. So you ain't ever doing anything completely right. So there's always things that you can find that can help improve. Honestly, let's be perfectly honest. The Vikings should be blowing out some of these teams. The Vikings should have blown out Green Bay when Aaron Rodgers went down. The Vikings really should have blown out the Bears. They should have blown out the Ravens. And, you know, it started to, yeah, we won the games by a pretty sizable lead in some of these cases, but honestly, like, we need more from this position, and I keep saying it. Case Keenum is, again, I said it on Sunday, thank you for your service. I appreciate it. Someone else is going to take over from here, because at the end of the day, when these injuries start to pile up, not to say that they are, but if they do, or for whatever reason, you know, Diggs or Thielen or somebody's out for an extended period of time, we're going to need more from that position. We're going to need a guy who can step in, whether that be Bradford or Teddy. That's just not Keenum. And, you know, let's just get away from, you know, just because we criticize something, that means that we automatically hate it. We automatically want to see it burn or whatever the case is. You have family members, right? So, like, if your family members aren't doing something well, like, you have the right to say, like, hey, I don't think you're doing this well. I still love you. However, I think that you can improve in this era. JR, myself, everybody on the pod, we still love the Vikings, but we can see the areas that need to be improved despite winning. Mike Zimmer does the same exact thing for his team. You know, so why wouldn't we as fans want to take over up that same mold of, you know, we're not just going to be like, we're winning, so everything's good. No, we're winning, but we can still improve. That's what the great teams do.
You don't know the play calls, Yinka. And don't bring Miles and I into this. We have chosen to sit this one out. You and JR are riding by yourselves. Actually, I'm just playing.
The Vikings are winning out and winning the Super Bowl. So
they are winning the Super Bowl at home with Case Keenum at quarterback. Take great that. Well, you know, we've gone through a lot, talked about a lot of things, but we are right at about, you know, our time for this evening. So to wrap things up, get us out of here, we are actually going to try to do a rapid reaction that is actually rapid. So one word answers from each of you. We're going to start with JR because he's the one that tweeted it today. What is the first word that popped to your mind where you saw that Mike Zimmer smile and wink talking about Teddy and when he might be ready to play?
So,
yes, sir. Miles, how about you?
Hope.
Oh boy. Zaxi Prince.
I'm going to go with love.
Oh. Oh. And I like that. And we're just going to transition right from the love because it is a glorious day. When I go back, if I, you know, have time, not too tired and have to produce this show, the hallelujah music might start playing at this point in the pod right now, because, you know, we're about to talk about upcoming projects. And, you know, if you've been listening to it for a while, I've been giving Yinka a bit of a tough time, but Yinka, you get to go first today. Let the people know what you got on deck for them.
Yeah, man, it's finally going to happen. I'm dropping my Teddy article. I got a few quotes from him way back when. You know, they were short quotes, but, you know, it just gave me a little bit of insight. Non-football quotes, but I still tied them together. Finally dropping the Teddy article. It does have a theme around it. I'm just going to kind of drop it. It's actually centers around Game of Thrones, so if you haven't seen the show.
Spoiler alert.
What I'm talking about. Yeah, maybe what I'm talking about doesn't make as much sense. I will put a spoiler alert at the top because I do go in through some parts of the show and whatnot. But it was actually a lot of fun. It did take me a while just because I wanted to really kind of build a narrative around what I was trying to get at with it. So yeah, I'm excited for people to get a chance to read it.
And it's really good. So hopefully when Yink is done putting these final touches on it, it'll be out there and everyone will be able to check it out. It's a good read. Miles, what's up with you, man? What you got on deck for us?
Man, I'm still working on my draft my draft prospects list. I'm getting there. I've just been really busy, and then I got sick over the weekend, so I'm getting there.
All right, all right, all right. And JR, bring us home, man. What you got on deck?
You know, we got the Climbing the Big Board podcast releasing Thursday, discussing a lot of great draft stuff. Of course, we're talking wide receivers. I'm sure that makes Miles happy.
Sure does.
Also, I'll be releasing a Vikings mock draft on Friday.
All right, all right, all right. Well, we know who you are supposed to be drafting. Can't wait to see those questions for you. And I will be recording a Pocket Protector's pod here before too long. They're coming. They're coming. But I also wanted to give a shout out to everyone out there. If you're still listening right now, we do. And JR's been you know, letting everyone know. But we do have some Climb in the Pocket apparel. So if you go on over to climbinthepocket.com, there's the most recent post. It'll link you to our store on Redbubble, where you can go on, buy hoodies, t-shirts, stickers, phone cases, whatever you want. The mugs are quite nice. And support the pod. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much all I got for this evening. Once again, my name's Jason Brown, joined by J.R. Miles and the Saxy Prince. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, and we will talk to you soon.